What up, everyone? Welcome back to the Fitness Stuff for Normal People podcast. I'm Tony.
And I'm Mariana.
And the fitness industry right now, it kind of sucks. It's become something driven by external validation and whatever can drive clicks or page views at this point. Really just directing attention away from the things that actually matter. So no, we're not just trying to provide you another fitness podcast, but actually give you the knowledge and tools so you have the confidence to apply the best possible training and nutrition into your own life, where today's episode, we are going to take you through a complete guide on how to set up the perfect lean bulk, or how to maximize how much muscle you're building while minimizing how much fat you gain during a building or bulking phase. From exactly how to set up your calories and macros to exactly what matters in your training and how to build your workout to optimize muscle growth. By the end of today's episode, you should have everything you need to know on how to properly take yourself through a lean bulk or muscle building phase. But before we jump in, you guys know we built this podcast from the ground up, which is myself, Mariana, and our incredible editor, Reagan, not some media agency or supporting company who would ultimately filter what we have to say and bias everything we do. Although it'd be a lot easier to grow with an agency like that, we won't forfeit that creative control and just refuse to mislead anyone in any sort of way. And the easiest and freest way you could continue to help us grow is to take the next 15 seconds and just leave us a 5-star review on whatever platform you're listening to us on, which tells the streaming service to push our podcast out to more people. And if you're on Spotify, you can even follow us now, making sure every single Monday when we drop a brand new episode, you don't miss a thing.
And if you want more after each episode, you can join us on Premium for just $5 a month, where you get a bonus episode every single Friday where we answer your own questions. You also get full training programs like our high frequency full body program, our ultimate push pull leg program, our glute growth program that we dropped a few weeks back. And you also get other sick perks like our weekly supplement giveaway, exclusive discounts to companies like Oura Ring, Examine Plus, and much more. You can go ahead and sign up in the show notes below. And before we get into the episode, a quick shout out to today's sponsor, every week's sponsor, Legion Athletics. We talk about them all the time. We love them. We really like to align with companies that have similar values as us, and we're really dedicated to the research in the fitness, health, nutrition space, and Legion absolutely is. They are third-party tested. They have a whole scientific review board, and I really like on their website how with every single product they have, they also provide all of the research that goes along with it, and their blog is also a great resource if you're just looking to get more easy-to-digest, quick information. You can get 20% off your first order or double points on every order after that with our code FSPOD, or you can use the link in our show notes below.
Mariana is on autopilot today.
Wow, that just came out. Yeah.
That was almost smoother than normal. What's been up with you?
I had neurovirus for 4.5 days straight. So yesterday was, I'm recording now, and yesterday was my first day of almost being normal. So I had a full day of sleeping, but after 4 days of not really eating anything, keeping anything down and not drinking, like being very dehydrated, we are running on fumes.
I got a text yesterday at around noon saying, hey, just a heads up, today's the first day I haven't thrown up so far.
Yeah.
In like 5 days. So let's park tomorrow's episode and recording is a maybe into it. Those are just brutal, more because when you're just not sick, it's like you haven't had probably 100 calories over the last 4 days.
Yeah.
Drank any fluid at all. Like
it's
your body
worst,
might not.
Like you can't keep water down. And also water makes you nauseous. Like
yes.
The thought of putting it like the grossest thing. And I couldn't keep it down anyway. So now I'm just like slugging water. So I'm not going to be 100% today.
To me, it's shockingly good how well you're doing. Before we jump into this episode, I have to tell you the story about my creatine grandma. For those who are unaware, I got my grandma to start taking creatine last Christmas. I got it for her. There's that sound I was missing.
I made sure not to try and drink. Not why would I when I'm sick, but I don't know. Some people have things that they just want to drink. Like I didn't even go near Diet Coke.
I can't keep down water. Just give me Diet Coke. So Anywho, I got my grandma creatine, my grandma Anna. Love her to death. I got her creatine for Christmas last year. She's in her upper 70s and I've always loved her because she's so interested in what I do. She's just curious and I love it. But I got her creatine. So this was 4 months ago or so. And I got a text from her the other day saying, Tony, can you call me? I have a question about creatine I'm really curious about. Because she lives in Denver. I'm in San Diego. So we don't talk as often. We probably call each other every few weeks. And I'm like, sure, let me call her back. Because I just remember setting her up saying, hey, put this little teaspoon in your coffee every morning. Don't think twice about it. And she's like, Tony, I have to ask you about this creatine. When she was on the phone, she was kind of, her voice was wavering, almost like she was about to tear up a little bit. And I was like, what is grandma going to tell me right now?
Oh, no.
I was like a little worried for a second. And she was like, Tony, you've known for the last 10 years, I've had such bad leg pain. Like she's had muscular leg pain that prevented her from walking far distances at all. Like she can't really go to the mall. She could barely walk to the mailbox and back to get her stuff just because she'd have this pain in her muscles and her hip for the last 10 years. Like as long as I can really remember, since I was in my teens, she's always had this limp and walking problem. She's like, I don't know if it was the creatine, but I can't tell you the last time that I've been able to walk without a limp and my muscles in my legs don't hurt anymore when I'm walking. And I started to notice it about a month after I started taking creatine that you gave me. She's like, I haven't changed. That's the only thing. I didn't start taking a new supplement, a new vitamin, mm-hmm. a new medicine, a new anything. She's like, do you think that has something to do with it? Because Tony, I haven't felt this good in over 10 years. And I was like, grandma?
Wow.
I'm like, it might have something to do. I mean, nothing else had changed in her. It was just muscular leg pain, like in her quads, hamstrings, mm-hmm. and calves, that would prevent her from walking and tightened up her hip. And it lined up essentially 4 weeks after she started taking creatine, which it takes about 3 to 4 weeks to saturate your muscle tissue. I'm like, oh my God. And she was like almost on the verge of tears. She's like, I can't tell you how happy I've been for the last few months because I forgot what living without pain in my lower body felt like.
Aww.
I was like, oh my God. She was about to make me cry. She was like on cloud nine telling me this. Sweetest freaking thing. So obviously I can't guarantee it's all creatine or anything like that, but I was like, oh my gosh.
Yeah, but still. And I mean, it just goes to show, I think it might be the number one determinant of overall quality of life as you age is maintaining your independence. And losing that and then getting it back is, I can't even imagine.
And it's like you've lived with pain, injury, things like that, where if you just live with it for so long, it's not a temporary thing. You almost forget what it's like to live without it. So now she's telling all of her bridge friends. So that's the grandma creatine update. If you love your grandma, get her to start taking creatine. Anywho, let's talk about how to bulk up.
I need to eat. I feel like I lost like 10 pounds of water weight or.
You need to go on a temporary bulk. You need to go on a temporary bulk. Anywho, this conversation between clean and dirty bulking, which is still really, really relevant in this industry for some reason. But I think it's important to start by this important distinction. When I was putting together all the notes for this episode, looking online for lean versus dirty bulking, a lot of people in the industry refer to it as clean versus dirty bulking. Clean versus dirty, not lean versus dirty. Mm. And I think it's important to start with some definitions from at least what I could conjure so far are that dirty bulking is where you're dedicated to a mass gaining phase with the goal of building muscle. You are meeting your protein requirements, and we'll talk about exactly where that is later. But then the rest of your calories other than protein are just kind of coming from question mark. Like doesn't really matter, or junk food. You could fill it up with whatever you could imagine as long as you're hitting your protein goal. And junk food, it's typically defined as foods that are just generally higher in salt, sugar, saturated fats. They're highly processed, highly palatable, easy to overconsume is what most people refer to as junk food. So in dirty bulking, you can crush a protein shake and a sleeve of Oreos to hit your calorie and protein goal, and you're good. That's all that matters because we know calories and protein intake, that's going to really determine how your, at least, body physically changes. Where the standard definition of clean bulking is with the same intention of gaining muscle, but where you're essentially just eating no junk food or just clean eating, which we just love that word, right? But essentially just where you're clean eating, not eating any junk food, only eating healthy foods, or clean eating is generally what they define as mostly whole foods, limiting processed foods, where protein sources are coming from leaner meats. Most of their fats are coming from poly and monounsaturated fats instead of saturated fats. Outside of the standard definition, I think this is kind of a stupid choice to have to make. And I want to see what your take on this is, because we know that the quote unquote health of a food doesn't necessarily determine how your body composition changes. this is where a lot of people struggle because they're like, I'm doing all the right things. I'm eating healthy, but my body's not changing. Mm-hmm. It's because eating healthy and eating to change your composition aren't the same thing. They can overlap, but they're not the same thing. And even then, the health or composition of your food you eat only contributes a fraction of your total health, with other things like your activity levels, your genetics, your total food intake, your body composition contributing to your overall health. But if you eat the same amount of calories and the same amount of protein over a meaningful amount of time, your body will tend to physically change in the exact same way. You'll gain or lose the same amount of muscle, and you'll gain or lose the same amount of fat, no matter how clean or dirty you want to label those foods as. And I think it's mostly because we got to think of these in first and second order consequences. The first order consequence, the immediate result of your actions, like the first splash of a pebble hitting water. The second order consequences are the ones to follow that initial reaction. So the ripples that come after that first splash. And I think one of the biggest, I think, components of dirty bulking that a lot of people start out by liking is that it gives you freedom. It's fun. You're like, oh my God, I got to eat all this delicious food. I'm gaining weight. That's my goal. But for example, like if you're smashing a protein shake and a sleeve of Oreos before your workout and you end up feeling like complete shit, but don't know why, let's examine the evidence here. You're an idiot. That's what it is. You're feeding your body trash. If you eat like crap most of the time, you're probably going to feel like crap most of the time too. Mm-hmm. Your workouts will suck. Your sleep will suck. Your gut health will suck. It won't be fun long term. Everyone's been there.
You know what and this is as someone, I'm not a part of the bodybuilding community. So this is like someone looking at it from an outsider's perspective. So just, this is strictly my opinion, but I've always seen people who really like commit to the dirty bulk and then they'll do this crazy cut. I'm like, you're just glamorizing your eating disorder. You're fucking full out binge fest and then super, super like your cut is just so unrealistic. You could never maintain it. But you can for the short time that you're doing it, and you know that you have this almost okay binge, prolonged binge of eating whatever the fuck you want, because then you're just going to go back to being super restrictive, and it's just this up, down, up, down, up, down. And I feel like, yeah.
It's easier to stick to a more restrictive cutting phase when you know that you can just go off the rails when it's done.
Yeah.
Right? Not that it's like, oh, I have to maintain this for a long time. I think this is just like the whole clean versus dirty topic when it comes to bulking and why we need to change it from clean to lean. Is this false dichotomy between choosing to eat healthy and eat unhealthy, or eat clean and eat dirty. Like, we know that how your body composition changes comes down to your total calorie intake, your total protein intake, and the details of your training, style and frequency. Those three things will determine how your body physically changes, not how you feel, but how you physically change. Okay. How clean your food is doesn't impact what percent of weight you gain comes from fat versus muscle. If you're eating in a calorie surplus, hitting your protein goal from clean or dirty foods, you're going to gain the same amount of muscle or fat if everything else is equal. So,
can I ask you a question before we get too far into it? Just in case, I feel like a lot of the general public who are just kind of into health and fitness may just hear the words bulking and going through a bulk phase and just completely think that this isn't for me. This is more for the advanced or more extreme, or people have been doing it for that long. I feel like there is that kind of stigma around also cutting too, like thinking it's for just like the diehard all in. How could this apply to more someone who's like still intermediate even?
Well, I would almost even further that to say it would almost affect women even more than men, because the term bulky or bulking isn't usually one that lies in most females' goals.
Yeah.
And that's why I typically, outside of just this episode and trying to speak to what it's normally referred to as, I think calling it a building phase or a muscle building phase is a lot more accurate. And I think it matters so much more because we've talked about how much muscle matters, period, for anybody that walks the earth. Whether your goal is to look lean, toned, and defined, if you want to be a bodybuilder, if you want to just live longer, like muscle matters. And especially this is the problem that a lot of people have when they're facing that skinny fat dilemma of, you know, feeling skinny in clothes, but then not looking toned or defined. It's like, you're missing that piece. You're missing muscle there. You know, like we've talked about how important it is for, I really think anybody, period. I'm trying to think of an exception, but I can't.
Yeah.
Anybody, period, to go through a muscle building phase, to at least get a decent amount of lean body mass on their bodies to maintain through life. I think that's a better way to look at it, because I think you're right. Like the term bulking, I feel like does people just automatically kind of like whoosh it off.
Yeah.
Is that what you're saying? Because it definitely does. Definitely does. So instead of, and I think just with that like dichotomy of either clean versus dirty, it's like, let's focus on the things that matter. I think instead of focusing on clean versus dirty, we want to call it like a lean bulk or a lean building phase, where a lean bulk or a lean building phase is simply focused on what matters. It's focused on maximizing how much muscle you can grow while minimizing the amount of fat you put on. And I think that's what applies to a lot of people, especially women. That's the number one reason I know a lot of girls want to build some glutes or build a lower body. And we talk about this. It's hard to build a significant amount of muscle without going through a dedicated building phase or bulking phase. But what deters a lot of people is there's almost this concept in the brain that's like, if you're bulking, you're gaining body fat. You're gaining significant body fat. You're going to get fluffy. And that's just not true if you do it right. So that's why I think this idea of lean bulking fits almost anybody looking to build in serious size, right? Where you're focusing on what matters, your calorie and protein intake from a dietary perspective, the different factors of your training that will give your muscle the right stimulus to continue to grow and not to overdo certain aspects that would lead to fat gain. Because you can get to a relatively lean body fat percentage. And from there, people have heard it as like main gaining, or what's the other? I can't remember what the other one's called. There's funny nicknames for it, but where you can gain size pretty much as quickly as you possibly can without putting on excess body fat. And that's what we're going to talk about more today, right? Where you're going to probably eat mostly whole foods. That's going to be important. We'll talk about for how you feel and perform. But you can occasionally have less quality food, like crushing some Chick-fil-A or going out. You can make it all fit, right? It's not one or the other. I think that's the biggest thing we got to get by.
Yeah. And I know we talk like, I mean, weight loss is such a huge focus of what we really help people with on this podcast. But so this is going to set you up for success with your weight loss as well, or fat loss, I would say more like that's going to specifically going to make the fat loss process a lot easier when you have more lean muscle mass, but also for that group. And I know we definitely have a handful of you listening who really do struggle to put on mass, like who have really, really struggled and haven't really taken the step to dive in and do it in a more structured way. This is going to really help you. And I also feel like, and there's a line here, there's definitely a line here, but especially for a lot of women who need to put on weight and they know they need to put on weight for a variety of health reasons, having this sort of structure and doing it in kind of a stepwise manner, knowing the evidence behind it, why you're doing it, how to execute it, can make it a lot less daunting and give you kind of this clear guide of what to expect. Because with women with putting on weight, sometimes the scariest thing is like not knowing what to expect and feeling like what if all of a sudden I'm just like this different person overnight, or what if I lose control or it goes crazy. Like this is one will prevent that from happening, but also give you a clearer view of the outcome you're looking for.
I couldn't have said it better myself, because that is, I think that is a fear, because you're right, not even just us, but I think most of the industry, 80-90% of what they talk about is fat loss or geared towards fat loss. So I don't want to say fat loss is easier in a sense, but it's more known. How to successfully lose fat is more known, where it's not just, it's not talked about as much on how to successfully go through a lean building phase, because it's a little bit, it's not a little bit, it's a lot different, and it requires more patience and a little bit more precision. Everything that we're going to go through. But before we exactly talk about how to set up your calories, how we want to set up your protein, how we want to set up your training, all the things to make sure that we're doing it right, I think we first want to understand this topic of muscle protein synthesis that we've briefly touched on, but we've never really gone too deep into, have we?
No, the most I like really remember talking about it is in recovery. At least me personally talking about it is our recovery episode. I know we've brought it up, but that's like the most depth I feel like I've.
Yeah. Or maybe in the full body science episode, we briefly touched on it, but to help people understand, I mean, muscle protein synthesis, this is what ultimately will determine whether or not you build muscle. So I think it's fairly important to talk about. And I almost want you to imagine this muscle protein synthesis. Imagine it like a brick wall. And the amino acids that you consume through protein in your diet are like the bricks adding to this wall. Okay, so the addition of these amino acids or bricks to the wall, making the wall bigger, that's called muscle protein synthesis, right? You're synthesizing or building new muscle, right? You're adding bricks to this wall. But that's not the only thing going on. Okay. At the same time as muscle protein synthesis or bricks are being added to the wall, there's something called muscle protein breakdown, which is where bricks are being taken away from the wall. Okay. Both of these processes are running all the time. There's no such thing as an anabolic only state where you're just not breaking down muscle. You're only adding to it. That doesn't exist. These two processes are always happening. And it's the balance that's going to determine whether or not you build muscle. Okay. So there are constantly bricks being added to the wall and constantly bricks being taken down, just at different rates. So muscle growth, or if you grow muscle, really just comes down to muscle protein synthesis being net higher than muscle protein breakdown over a period of time. You're adding more bricks over time than you are taking. And the same vice versa. If you end up losing muscle, it's because breakdown rates, or you're taking bricks away from that wall at a faster rate than you're adding to it over time. So it's a balance. That's how you should think about muscle protein synthesis. And I know these two things are scary, but we're going to focus mostly on muscle protein synthesis because, I mean, it's more important to focus on. And the reason why is that muscle protein breakdown, it stays within a pretty narrow range, no matter what your diet, lifestyle, training look like. Let's just say, like, if it's on an imaginary scale, the rate of muscle protein breakdown of a 1 to 100, let's say it pretty much stays between 20 and 40 at all times. So if muscle protein breakdown rates are at its highest because you're in a fasted state, because you're training, it increases when you're exercising. Let's say it can only go up to a 40. And then when everything is right, you're doing your best to manage it through diet, everything else, it can come down to a rate of 20, but it doesn't fluctuate a ton. Where muscle protein synthesis, you can influence a lot, like by a 3 to 5-fold increase at one time. So if muscle protein synthesis is normally around a 20, doing things like weight training, the style that we're going to talk about, eating a meal high in protein, this can spike it to 60 to 100 at a time. So it doesn't really have that upper limit as far as muscle protein breakdown does. So whether or not you're gaining muscle or you're net above or below that balance is almost entirely because of muscle protein synthesis. And you don't want to ignore completely muscle protein breakdown, but whether or not you gain muscle is going to come down to focusing in on muscle protein synthesis. So what are the aspects of this that we can focus on to really make a difference in that, right? Muscle protein. I'm going to say that 100 times. Muscle protein synthesis.
I know.
Say it 3 times fast. And there's 3 main aspects that influence rates of muscle protein synthesis. One is your training. Mostly, and we'll talk about this in setting up your training, mostly coming from your training frequency and your training intensity, or how close you're working to failure. The second piece is aspects of your diet, mostly coming from your protein intake, also coming from your total calorie intake, and then even meal frequency at the end of it. And then there's also aspects of your lifestyle, which can be impacted by muscle protein synthesis, which to a little bit lesser of a degree, but things like your sleep quality and quantity, stress, alcohol, stuff like that can really more dampen it.
Sorry, I almost interrupted you there. So you're saying, right, like all these factors are pretty big factors. Diet, what you eat every single day, what you're doing in your day to day, and how you're performing in the gym. Not just going to the gym, not just lifting weights, but making sure that you are training close to failure, applying progressive overload, all that. Sounds like, to me, you have to put in structured, consistent effort and a bit of it to put on considerable muscle mass. It sounds like that takes a lot of thought and planning. Again, you could get into this routine, and it's not just something that all of a sudden overnight someone's going to become really bulky from lifting weights. That's just what I want to clear up here.
Absolutely. It doesn't happen by accident. And I think that's probably what deters a lot of females from taking that step towards lifting weights, is they think that they might just start doing it and one day they'll look like, you know, Annie Thor's daughter, like a CrossFit athlete who might be on copious amounts of PEDs, not accusing anybody of it, but the girls that are just massive shoulders, mm-hmm. massive traps, which they have to be for that sport. That's awesome for them, right? Yeah. They need to be structured like that. But you got to keep in mind, those people have been training for probably 15 to 20 years at a very dedicated purpose of gaining that lean body mass to doing so. Mm-hmm. This didn't just happen where they woke up one day and looked like that. And it's impossible, because we're going to talk about this later. The rate to expect muscle growth and how much slower that is from fat loss, right? If you're in a dedicated fat loss phase, the larger your deficit goes, you can speed up considerably the amount of fat you lose week after week, right? It's not this tiny window. Building muscle takes time, like real freaking time. So that's always the funniest thing to me is when you hear people think they'll accidentally get too big. It's like, trust me, if you ask most dudes in the gym, they've been trying to get big for like the last 10 years. They would laugh that off. You accidentally get too big. They've been trying for 10 years and they're still trying to get bigger. Mm-hmm. Trust me, it's not going to happen by accident. So when it comes down to training, from a training point of view, muscle protein synthesis is influenced a lot by certain aspects here. And certain aspects, what I mean by that is there's certain pieces of your training that maybe matter a little bit more when it comes to muscle protein synthesis. For example, how many sets you do and what kind of weight you use, heavy versus light, doesn't actually impact muscle protein synthesis to much different of a degree. As long as you're not just doing like a set, it's not going to really make that big of a difference. What does matter, right? But as long as you're training between what looks to be about 8 to 20 hard sets per muscle group per week, your training volume, that's fine for maximizing muscle protein synthesis. What seems to matter the most when measuring muscle protein synthesis or this rate of building new muscle is your training frequency and the amount of muscular fatigue you build up during a set. So how many times you train a particular muscle group throughout the week and the amount of muscular fatigue you build up during a set, which is pretty much, are you taking it close to failure, right? So doesn't matter if you're doing lightweight around 20 reps or heavyweight around 4 reps. As long as you're taking that close to failure, that's what's going to stimulate muscle protein synthesis rather than stopping far short. Okay. And how long you've been training matters. How long you've been training really matters. So whether you're brand new or advanced. If you're a beginner, there's really no research that shows hitting a muscle group more than once per week will lead to more growth. We're going to talk about that in a little bit, but the topic of newbie gains. When you're brand new to the gym, you can mess around and do almost anything you want, but as long as you're lifting with intensity, you're going to build some good muscle, right? You can do a bro split hitting each muscle group one time per week and be perfectly fine. So if you're just starting out, optimizing your workout program probably isn't going to be the best use of effort, at least. But as you get more advanced, the time course that you can elevate muscle protein synthesis starts to decrease or starts to go down. So here's what I mean by that. After you lift weights, muscle protein synthesis spikes up, all right? It peaks at about 2 to 4 hours post-exercise. And in new lifters, it stays elevated up to a full 2, maybe a little bit more than 2 days. But about 48 hours after that workout, rates of muscle protein synthesis stay elevated, where in more advanced lifters, muscle protein synthesis returns back down to normal within just 12 hours. 12 hours. So a quarter of the time it spends elevated, meaning if I train my chest this morning, rates are going to be back down to normal by tomorrow morning. Okay. And that's just muscle protein synthesis. This is one aspect of training. This is not what we're talking about for everything. But the theory is the more frequently you can hit that muscle, the more spikes in muscle protein synthesis you will see throughout the week, and the less time muscle protein synthesis is lowered, which would potentially lead to more muscle growth. So this really just makes the argument, especially the more advanced you get, that training each muscle group at least 2 times per week is optimal. So in setting up your training, at least 2 times per week is optimal. But even that we talked about in the full body science episode, still one of my favorite ones to date. In more advanced lifters, like 4, 5, 6 years plus, you can see some really big success increasing your training frequency to 3 to 6 times per week on a muscle group. Do you remember that cool study we looked at, the Norwegian Frequency Project?
I was
going to
say this. Yeah, I feel like I don't remember when we talked about it, but
it was that full body episode. But there was this cool project, and it was back in 2012 where Norwegian researchers conducted a secret project called the Norwegian Frequency Project. You can look this up. Now, this study was designed to give their national powerlifting team a competitive advantage. So it was really never published in a peer-reviewed journal. I do want to say that. It was to give their team an advantage, so they didn't want to just publish their findings so everybody could have it. It's only been presented at, I think, several scientific conferences and only has one abstract that surfaced on the internet, but nothing else. But here's why this study was cool. It used very highly trained lifters and split them into 2 groups over a course of 15 weeks. One group did a full body training split, so training full body 3 days per week, and the other a full body split training 6 days per week. Now, the important part here is they exactly matched the total training volume throughout the week, or how many sets each muscle group did. So it's not like the group who was training 6 times per week was doing 2 times as much exercise. For example, this would mean if they were doing 18 total sets on their chest throughout the week, group one would be doing 6 sets on chest, each of their 3 workouts, totaling 18 across the week, where the group working out 6 times per week would only be doing 3 sets per workout, also totaling to 18. So it was the total, the same amount of work done. But by the end of the study, the 6 time per week group got nearly twice as big and twice as strong as the 3 time per week group. They increased their total strength by 10% compared to just 5%, and nearly doubled the muscle size growth in that 15-week period. And I think this is more, even more significant, because they were looking at already extremely advanced athletes, athletes that have been training for years. These weren't new lifters who would see progress doing no matter what you put them on. These were extremely advanced lifters, and it wasn't just in muscle size. It was in strength and size. So this was huge. And I think it just goes to show that maybe optimizing your frequency could really help you break through some barriers if you're a more advanced lifter looking to build muscle. I had never heard something like this project before, had you? Up until this?
No, where did you find it?
Do you ever just go down rabbit holes?
Yeah.
And it leads you somewhere, but you have 0 clue where the rabbit hole started?
Yeah.
It was one of those nights where it was just hours. It was in putting together the outline for that full body research episode. And it was just one of those rabbit holes where 5-6 hours in, I was just like,
yeah.
What is this? I was looking everywhere for every detail I could find about it. But up to that point, I had never seen that well of a controlled study done on advanced lifters. There's been similar ones done on non-advanced lifters. So that's one big piece, how frequently you're increasing that. But for bare minimum, you just want to at least be training each muscle group twice per week if you really want to maximize muscle growth and you've been training for more than a year. The other piece of training that really matters, at least from this training point of view, is the amount of muscular fatigue you build up. So in brief, we've talked about training to failure a lot in the last several weeks on this podcast. You don't need to be taking every set to absolute failure, but you need to be coming close. Like, just remember, in order for your body to adapt and grow, you need to apply some sort of stress that it can't currently handle. Mm-hmm. If you're just doing light weights, taking it nowhere near failure, and this is where a lot of also women, not to single anybody out, but I do see it more common in women than men, is they're afraid of going too heavy, especially on lower body and leg exercises. Look at your legs. They're freaking huge. I promise you they can handle some pretty big weights. And if you're just doing something that your muscle can already handle, it has no reason to adapt or change to get bigger and stronger to handle anything new, because you're not giving it anything new. So you have to be taking things close to failure. If you only have light weights available at like a hotel setup or an apartment gym setup, totally fine. You have to build up that fatigue by taking it close to failure. So you might just be doing a ton of high repetition training, which is still important. Body weight, it's going to be really challenging to really grow significant muscle. But I mean, there's been some times I've been stuck to like having 50-pound dumbbells max for certain weeks at a time, right? We've all been there.
Yeah.
Your gym has a pretty good spread, doesn't it?
My gym? Yeah. We got the hip thrust machine in, and we have got 2 hack squats. And yeah, we just got some new equipment in like 2 weeks ago.
I love a hip thrust machine so much more than doing barbell hip thrusts.
I've been using it. I'm obsessed with it.
Is it a good one too? I know there's some that mm-hmm. I've had that I don't love as much. Just something about how it's set up and I guess my anatomy, but
yeah. Oh, I really like it.
It's just because it doesn't take time to set up barbell hip thrusts.
So easy.
Anywho. Of course, along with these 2 aspects, when it comes down to your training and how you want to structure it, like what matters? Those 2 things matter a lot. But what we're going to be talking about is like how long you can expect this to take when we set up your diet and nutrition. Building a significant amount of muscle is going to take time. Okay. You're not going to build anything meaningful in 4 weeks, in 8 weeks, right? Like you'll start to see differences maybe 2 to 3 months in. Like physical differences it'll take you, and you can make some pretty meaningful progress over the course of a year. Building muscle takes time.
Mm-hmm.
And we know that as we progress, we need to implement that thing called progressive overload, which is just in short, applying more tension to your muscle over time. You have to continually increase the weight you're doing, the reps you're doing. You have to continue making that challenge harder on your muscle, or again, it will adapt to handle what you're giving it. And if you're not giving it anything more challenging, it has no reason to keep growing. You have to think about that. So if you're just going to the gym, doing whatever you feel like that day, whatever exercises you're in the mood for with random weights, random reps, random sets, I wouldn't expect to keep growing or build any significant muscle from that, right? Like get on some sort of a training program that maps out progressive overload into your training, right? That's the whole purpose of a training program. All of our 12-week training programs, they're a perfect place to start. It's $5 to be a part of premium. All of them over those 12 weeks map out and implement progressive overload every single week that you're going forward. Doesn't even have to be ours, but you got to be implementing progressive overload somehow or another, or you can't expect to continue to grow. So those are the important pieces when it comes to training. Let's talk about the diet. Because this is ultimately, I think this is what separates a lean bulk from a dirty bulk, or from putting on a lot of body fat and not putting on any body fat during a bulk. It's your diet, right? Your training can be lined up no matter what, but we know this, right? Your diet's what's going to move the needle. And that's why I can't keep saying this enough. This more applies to a fat loss goal. I don't know why I'm talking like this with my hand. It looks a little fruity. But I know this applies more to a fat loss goal, but nutrition will determine how your body progresses if training's lined up. If you're not making the progress you want to see in your training 5-6 days a week, take one of those days off and take that hour you now have and put that effort into you don't even have to meal prep for your week. You could, but just plan out your food for the week, right? Plan out what you're going to be eating to hit these dietary goals. Because if you don't, I don't care how hard you train. You're not going to build muscle. You're not going to lose. Your goal is not going to get to you.
Yeah. And also, like, I feel like anybody who has had an experience, I'm going back to women again, just speaking from that perspective, but has had an experience, because there are plenty of them where they're like, oh my goodness, weightlifting made me so big. That usually 1,000, honestly, I don't like to be too confident. So I'm going to say 99% of the time, it is because you are in a calorie surplus, too much of a calorie surplus, and you're not paying attention to that. So you have more fat on your body. Not bulky. You're not bulky because of all this muscle. Typically, this bulky look women are referring to is more fat, having more fat, being a little bit bigger. And there's nothing wrong with that. Some people, like, nothing wrong with that. I'm just speaking to the fact that 99% of the time, that could be changed by paying closer attention to your diet and your overall calorie intake. Protein, of course, but.
Absolutely. No, I mean, if you're a guy, if you're a girl, the difference between that fluffy look that people consider as more bulky and that lean, defined tone look that someone has a significant amount of muscle, that doesn't come down to, genetics a little bit. It just comes on top of, there comes down to how much body fat is stored on top of your muscle. We all have a layer of fat that goes over muscle. If you have a lot of fat there, you're going to look more bulky and fluffy. If there's not a lot of fat there, you'll look more lean and defined. So no matter guy, girl, whoever, if you're looking like that, it's probably not like, oh, I just messed around and accidentally put on 20 pounds of muscle. That's going to take you a couple years. It's because we probably were eating in too large of a surplus. So let's talk about calories before getting into protein, because your overall energy or calorie intake, it does play a big role in that process of muscle protein synthesis and building new muscle. And while the presence of amino acids from protein is what is really directly responsible for triggering muscle protein synthesis, your overall energy intake, or how many calories you're eating compared to burning, will massively influence the efficiency of this process. Okay.
Because muscle protein synthesis is an anabolic process. Any anabolic process in the body requires energy. You're creating something. You're building something. It is an energy requiring process, energy in the form of ATP, which you get from calories, versus catabolic process, muscle protein breakdown, is an energy releasing process. You release that ATP. So sorry, I just thought about that. And it's kind of an easier way. Like, you could
think about it. You're building new tissue in your body that didn't exist before. That's going to require some sort of fuel. Okay. So having a positive, it's called like a positive energy balance. Just eating more calories than you burn, a calorie surplus, it creates that anabolic environment that's conducive for muscle growth. Do you absolutely need to be in a calorie surplus to build muscle? No. You can do it at maintenance. You can even do it in a little bit of a deficit, a tiny, tiny deficit, like up to 10% if you're trying to recomp. It can happen. The rates will be way, way, way slower, but it can still happen. So having an energy surplus or a calorie surplus, it just gives you that energy that's necessary for synthesizing new muscle tissue. So incorporating the muscle protein synthesis, that process that's triggered by resistance training, the best way that you can do this, and even a lean building phase to not put on body fat, we got to determine how much of a surplus we need to be at. Like, how much do we want and how much is too much? Because too much is what leads to gaining body fat, right? You can give your body enough energy to support muscle growth. And think of it just like a cup is as it starts overflowing. Everything that overflows past that point is just going to body fat. Okay, yeah. This is the number one thing that separates a lean from a dirty bulk.
But is there any way to like 100% say you're not going to be putting on fat in a surplus? Aren't you always going to be putting on a little bit?
Valid point. Technically, no. Technically, maybe you could, but it's not realistic. You should expect to at least put on a tiny, tiny bit. Even if you're doing everything right that we're going to talk about, you'll put on a little bit of body fat, a little bit. And you can control how much that is.
And that's the only reason why I ask. Like, I have seen people say, like, this is going to ensure that you are not putting on any fat and you're only putting on muscle. And I just feel like that's so unrealistic. And
yeah, that's if you're eating it like a, if you're in a recomp, you could, but we're also trying to maximize muscle growth.
Yeah.
Right. We're trying to maximize. So if you really want to maximize muscle growth, you're going to, and I don't want this to scare people because people are like afraid of, oh my God, putting on fat. It's not like you're going to gain just as much fat as you do muscle, right? Like see a lot of people doing a dirty bulk who will put on as much, if not more body fat than they do muscle. And then they just get stuck in this cutting and bulking cycle where it takes them so long and aggressive to cut because they put on so much excess body fat that they end up losing any muscle they gained in the bulk because it takes so long to burn off all the fat. And then vice versa, they just put all the fat back on that they burned because they're going so aggressive in their bulk. Mm-hmm. The whole point of this is to really minimize fat gain. So not eliminate, but minimize fat gain while maximizing how much muscle you can grow. Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's the point. Now, over and over again, research is pretty clear that there is a tipping point. And again, your genetics are going to determine exactly where this is, but the tipping point seems to be around 10% above your maintenance. So at 10% calorie surplus, anything after that point generally will not lead to any extra muscle gain. And again, this determines on how far you are, what that surplus looks like. But anything above 10% doesn't end up leading to this, because that's a big argument for this dirty bulk, is it's like you got to eat more calories, even if you're putting on fat, if you really want to maximize muscle growth. And that's just not true. Like, for example, this really well-done paper out of Brazil, which has been repeated countless times, basically showed that when you fed or overfed one group of elite athletes on a four-day training program by 600 extra calories on average compared to another group, that yeah, they gained more weight compared to the other group eating 600 calories less, but they didn't gain any more muscle, right? So the only difference between this group is one was in the surplus, slight surplus, one was 600 calories more than that. Mm-hmm. The 600 calories more made them gain more weight. They gained the same exact amount of muscle as the people eating less. They did, however, the 600 positive calorie group gained three times the amount of fat mass as the other group, right? That's the main difference. So just about all the extra weight from bulking was added as fat, not muscle. And again, this is something that's been repeated over and over and over again, because gaining muscle is something you can only do at a certain speed. Like we talked about earlier, when it comes to fat loss, the bigger you set up a calorie deficit, the faster you will lose fat if you can maintain it, right? That's the whole purpose of not going too aggressive, because you can't maintain it. That's the biggest piece. Now, I do want to highlight one aspect that I think is overlooked, because it's not black and white in this thought process of eating as much as you can to put on as much muscle. And I do want to just point this out too. There's going to be a lot of dudes who will also say, like, that's just not true. I gained 30 pounds of muscle in 4 months and 6 months. No, you didn't. We're going to talk about the rates of what you can build muscle. After that point, anything or any weight you do gain is going to come from fat. And it might make you look more muscular, but it's coming from body fat as you. Now, the one, I think, valid point that has never been shown or proven in research, but that I think logically makes sense, I almost call it like bear mode. But as we think about going bear mode in a second order consequence, right? We're gaining a meaningful amount of body fat and weight to go through a bulking phase. Because look at powerlifters, for example. The heavier you are or the more mass you have, generally the more weight you can lift. The more weight you can lift, the more stimulus to grow you can give your muscle, right? The more you can apply progressive overload. So look at powerlifters. These are thick individuals, right? These are thick people. A lot of people question, they're like, why wouldn't they lose that extra 40, 50 pounds on their gut? Wouldn't that help them squat a bigger weight? It's like, no, the more mass you have, like you need that mass, not just all coming from muscle to move weight. So there might be an argument or case to be made of going full bear mode, like just packing on some extra body fat intentionally. That would only really make sense if you're going to look at your bulk over the course of years trying to add on. Like I've seen this when I used to work out at like Armbrust Pro Gym in Denver, where bodybuilders would compete and they just know that they need to build on significant size. They'll go through a 2-3 year building phase. That phase, it might make sense to put on some extra body fat because you're gonna be able to move more weight over time. For most people, I don't think that makes as much sense, right? So in order to lean bulk, that's what we're going to focus on, because that's the goal of this episode, is talking about lean bulking, minimizing fat gain, and maximizing how much muscle you can put on. Aim at eating 10% more calories than you burn in a day. That's the best spot to be. 10% more. That's not as much as most people think. And I want to go over some points that people might have some questions about here. For example, 10% calorie surplus. What that means is if you burn, let's say 2,500 calories a day, you would aim to eat about 10% more, or 250 calories more than that. So around 2,750, right? This will pretty much max out how much muscle your body is ability to gain while making sure that you're not giving yourself too much to put on extra body fat. And we have a calculator in the show notes below that'll give you a rough idea. But at the end of the day, and I can't say this enough, even though we spent a ton of time on this calculator, and I do believe it is probably the best for estimating TDEE, at the end of the day, that's exactly what it is, an estimate, right? Mm-hmm. Because especially, and this is going to be guys like hard gainers, things like this. This was me in my early 20s. You might increase your calorie intake by 10%, and your weight might temporarily jump, but it might level out and you won't gain weight. And people will be like, well, I'm eating in a 10% calorie surplus. I'm not gaining weight. What's the deal? Just like the same conversation of people who are like, I'm eating in a calorie deficit. I'm not losing weight. What's the reason for that?
You're not in a deficit anymore.
You're not in a deficit. So same thing. If you're not gaining weight, you're not in a surplus. Like end of the day, that's just what's happening. Okay. So how you want to guarantee this, and it's a weird phenomena. I've noticed more when you are increasing food to gain weight. I don't know if you've noticed this more. But when you increase your calorie intake by, let's say, 10% above your maintenance, your body doesn't respond like a 10% increase. Like it sometimes takes more of a 10% jump to actually get your body to a 10% surplus, if that makes sense. Okay, because, and I'll show you what I mean here in a second. But for your goal to really maximize or guarantee where you're at here, I would recommend taking daily weigh-ins on the scale and track them using an app like Happy Scale. I know there's several out there, but Happy Scale gives you your 2 to 4 week trending weight, right? Because your body weight, it fluctuates 2 to 8 pounds per day just based on water weight alone. Yeah. And what you want to aim for, you're not looking for a lot of movement on the scale when you're optimally gaining muscle, right? In your first year, so those newbie gain periods, you want to expect to gain about 1 to 1.5% of your body weight per month. 1 to 1.5% of your body weight per month. Okay. In your second year, about half of that, about 0.5 to 1% of your body weight per month. In your third year and after that, about 0.25 to 0.5% of your body weight per month. That's not a lot to look at. For example, when I started lifting, I weighed about 170 pounds. So in that first year, I would hope to gain about 1.7 to 2.5 pounds per month. Per month. That's about a half a pound per week. That's a half a pound per week. That's hard to recognize, right?
So
that's
why I'm using it. How much do you weigh now?
About 220. I should send you a picture when I was 170. It was funny.
I cannot picture you at 170.
Well, it was funny. I was a shorter, chubby kid. And then I hit this crazy growth spurt for height. And it just looked like it stretched my body out. Like when I grew to like 6'2", 6'3", and I didn't gain, like my body just didn't increase in size. It was just stretched. So I went from like being short and pudgy to like tall and insanely thin looking. Never felt thin looking back on it, but looking back at pictures, I'm like, holy crap, that was crazy. And then I'll have to send you pictures. It was funny. But I mean, at that point, I was only looking at gaining 0.5 pound per week. Again, your body weight's going to fluctuate 2 to 8 pounds per day on body weight or on water weight alone. So that's why an app like Happy Scale, if you really don't want to put on extra body fat, matters. Because mm-hmm. if you're gaining much more than 0.5 pound, maybe up to like 0.75 pounds a week, you're going to be packing on a little bit of extra body fat. And I think to clarify this too, when a lot of people get afraid of the scale or if you have a weird relationship with it, this isn't counting the first 2 weeks that you start to increase your food intake. And there's a few reasons for this. But in the first 2 weeks of increasing your food intake, your weight's usually going to jump a little bit more than that just for two main reasons. One, you now have, and this is something people always forget, you now have more food volume moving through your body and digestive system. Okay? Food has weight, right? Like you'll hold anything. Food weighs something. So eating more of it will mean that more total food is going through your system because it takes about 2 or more days to fully go through your system. You're going to have more total food weight in your body. That's not body fat. That's not muscle. That's just food weight, food volume moving through your body. And the second is most of the time, and we're going to talk about macros here after protein, if you increase your carb intake, which is usually what we'd recommend, you got to remember, and if you've listened to the show before, carbs get broken down into something called glucose that is stored as glycogen in your muscle tissue, not body fat. You don't store your carbs that you eat as body fat. For each gram of glycogen, it has to be stored with 3 to 4 grams of water in your muscle tissue. That is a good thing. Mm-hmm. Okay, so that can make your weight jump a little bit. You'll notice this if you eat a high carb meal. You'll typically retain more water in your muscle. People that feel like bloated or like it's under their skin, that's usually because they had a really high salty meal before that too. Not the same thing. But carbs will store more in. So you'll probably see for those two reasons, a little bit of a jump in the first 2 weeks. That's why it's important to measure it, see if it levels out, and then see if you need to increase more.
I have a quick little like story time just about like an example of how like weight can fluctuate so much that just recently happened to me.
Oh gosh, I'm
still frustrated about it. I knew I had my, like 2 weeks ago, I had to go to my primary care appointment. And whenever I do that, I like my appointment was at 4. So I was like, okay, like I'm going to weigh myself because they take my weight. And so I weigh myself like first thing in the morning to get an accurate like reading of like what my actual weight is. Cause I'm like at 4, that's not all this food, all this water in my body. Like that's not going to be accurate. So, and I went and like they were to go take my weight, which they still took it. I told my doctor and I was like, hey, just so you know, like this is 6 pounds heavier than what I weigh in at. Like that I took my weight this morning and it was a six pound difference, which like that's not the biggest, but like on a BMI scale too, especially since I'm tall.
Oh, yeah.
Like that can make a huge difference. And she goes, yeah, but this is your weight now. That was her first response. And I was like, I had no energy. I didn't even care. I'm not going to argue with it. I'm not that person that's going to argue with a doctor. But in my head, I'm just like, did you go to med school? That is such basic knowledge. Like, are you kidding me? And she like didn't even, she just like completely blew me off and like, did not even care. I'm not going to argue with her, but it was just.
Well, it's funny because not even just med school, but even if you just know what that is.
Yeah.
And just think about it with common sense for like half a minute, you realize that that line of thinking is just incorrect. You know what I'm saying? Like med school or not, just if you know what that is, that's so funny.
I was so annoyed.
Yeah.
And like
it can fluctuate. Like that's
like my weight fluctuates a lot. And I'm like 6 pounds. Like if someone consistently thought they were 6 pounds heavier than they actually were because they didn't know this, like that can really fuck with your mental a little bit. Like
oh, absolutely. If you have a weird relationship with the scale, yeah, seeing it jump 6 pounds would make you have a heart attack.
Yeah.
Hard still, and that's why like, yeah, measuring for trends and like looking at it as data, that's all it is. The more data you have, the better decisions you'll be able to make moving forward. Weighing in once a month tells you nothing meaningful because you don't know if that first weigh-in was on a spike or a dip and the other was on the opposite. So you could have been averaging gaining weight every single week, but you just so happened to measure your first weigh-in on a spike and your last weigh-in on a dip, and it looks like you lost weight. That's not indicative of what was actually happening. And same thing, vice versa. And for an example of this, I'll even use my a client that's going through this recently, which I'll message after this to make sure it's cool to tell the story or edit it out. But she's transitioning from this recomp maintenance phase to a dedicated lean bulking phase. And we started by jumping up her calories by, it was like 350 to 400, I think it was. So she was at like 2,700, 2,800. And I was like, okay, we're not going to make any changes. See if we need to increase for 2 weeks. Let's do this consistently for 2 weeks. Take your weigh-ins. What do you know? The first week, I think she jumped up 1.5 pounds. And the rate, like if you look at that on a scale, like it goes, like it's a line that's going up. Mm-hmm. A little bit of a scare. You're like, I don't want to maintain that. It's like, okay, let's hang on. The next week, what did it do? The curve flattened out. And right now that's her new maintenance, is now 350 to 400 calories higher than that. So we increased again by another couple hundred. So keep monitoring that after the first few weeks, because you're going to jump. It's going to spike for one reason or another. Before you make changes, or if you're like, oh my God, that's too fast, I need to pull back. Give it 2 weeks, give it 3 weeks, see if it levels out before making any changes. And if it doesn't, cool, pull back. If it does pull back, cool, increase your food again, right? But you need that data to move things forward. Now, the final piece of this lean bulking puzzle, as you set your calorie intake, as you dial in your training, you get on a program, is the protein, right? The protein. Now, we have a protein calculator that'll help you figure out exactly where you need to be. We'll put that in the show notes below too. Ultimately, we use it, and I think this is the more accurate way to do it, is just to base it off of your current lean body mass, not just how much you weigh. A lot of recommendations online, even in these journals, which I just don't think are very accurate, are based on your total body weight, 1 gram per pound of body weight, which I don't think is a good way to look at it. Because I mean, think about this. If you base it just off your body weight, that would mean that LeBron James, who is 6'9" and trains 30 plus hours per week as a high level athlete that weighs 250 pounds, would be recommended the same protein intake as someone who's just obese, doesn't train, and is 5 feet tall, who also weighs 250 pounds. Do those two people need the same amount of protein? Absolutely not. So I think a better way to, or a more accurate number to look at it, is looking at your lean body mass. So pretty much estimate what your body fat percentage is, which our calculator helps you do. Find out how much of your body weight is coming from body fat and just subtract that from your total weight. That leaves you with your lean body mass, mostly coming from muscle. And from there, aim for about 0.8 to 1.2 grams of protein per pound of lean body mass, right? Lean body mass. And we give you that window because as long as you're hitting the minimum, that's going to be best for your body to change from a physical perspective. You can maximize that and go to the higher end of that limit from 0.8 to 1.2. That's usually better for like if you're trying to lose body fat, which I know sounds counterintuitive since losing fat and building muscle, you'd be like, building muscle takes more protein, right? Usually not, just because of the satiation effect that protein gives you, right? If you can get the same physical change from a little bit lower of an intake, around 0.8, 0.9 grams per pound of lean body mass, without trying to have to shove more protein in your face because you're already eating so much, it's going to be tough. So at least as long as you're feeding yourself enough there, that's at least going to give yourself, I think, good room to grow. Good room to grow.
Yeah. And I think people forget sometimes too, like I will see crazy recommendations for protein. Like you have to be doing 1.6 grams per pound of lean body mass. Like I've seen, and it's just like,
it's overkill.
Muscle protein synthesis is one of the, like, building muscle is one of the things proteins, like eating more protein does. Like protein has so many functions in the body.
It's not just for muscle.
It's not just for putting on muscle. I just think that's...
It's so funny to me. And this is where I'll go, especially this, I've seen this more in dudes than women, is when you continually eat more and adjust after eat more, especially if you're a super like highly active individual, you're a bigger person who already carries a lot of muscle mass, you're going to have to eat a lot of food. And I know this is controversial, but in going through some very dedicated building phases where I was eating around 4,000 calories per day to support growth, and a deficit phase of eating pretty low as well, I'll tell you firsthand, I mean, they both kind of suck, eating that much food consistently, in my opinion, and going through it was harder than dieting.
Yeah.
Dieting sucked. I hated feeling hungry. But sometimes, especially if you're a dude and you're highly active, the amount you have to eat, if especially protein, is so satiating. Like when you're stuffed after a meal, how many times have you been like, man, I could really use some steak or some chicken or any source of protein? You've never once craved that when you're full. So imagine being constantly full and satiated and having to force feed more and more protein. It's not ideal. Mm-hmm. So that's why you don't need to max that out. You don't need to. And side note on here, because I know this is a lot like in the bodybuilding space, as far as protein timing, anabolic windows, as long as you're hitting your total daily protein goal, 90 to 95% of your progress building muscle will come from that. Okay. You don't need to worry about splitting your meals up in every 2 to 3 hours, having 20 to 30 grams of protein. This has been shown over and over again in research. When you look at people who are fasting or doing OMAD or one meal per day, gaining just as much muscle as groups who are eating 3 to 5 meals per day, as long as both groups are eating as much protein. Okay. That's been observed over and over again, the identical amount of muscle. If you're in that bodybuilding space, like that upper 1-2% of people who really are like competing for shows, then protein timing can matter just a little bit, especially to give you an edge. That's not who we're talking about here. And I think to really maximize, like the biggest time, if you really want to focus on the big rocks versus little rocks, I think the most important time to pay attention to protein intake is the timing around your workouts, since that's when rates of muscle protein breakdown are going to be at their highest. But as long as you're eating a meal within like some sort of protein, 2 to 3 hours at least before your workout, and getting some sort of protein in relatively soon after your workout, you should be just fine. Like a good rule of thumb is to aim for no more than 4 to 5 hour window between your pre and post-workout meal. That's it. Meaning if your pre-workout meal is at 1 p.m. and then you train at 2 or 3, that your post-workout meal wouldn't be after 5 or 6. Okay, that would be the biggest goal, a 4 to 5 hour window pre to post. And if you train in the morning like I do fasted, I've talked about it a lot, a supplement like HMB, taking 1 to 3 grams per day, would be beneficial. Not like I don't train fasted because I think it's better. I just wake up at 5 a.m. and do not want to stomach food. I'll throw it up because I'm going straight to the gym. I'm not waking up an hour earlier to have a solid balanced breakfast, right? Taking like HMB 1 to 3 grams, best supplement you can do to prevent muscle protein breakdown while training, right? But then as soon as I'm done getting home, eating a high protein meal. Those are the biggest factors of setting up a lean bulk. If you can optimize your protein intake, really take the time to figure out where you need to be from a calorie standpoint. That's probably the most important thing that separates the lean from the dirty bulk. And your training is dialed in. You're not just exercising. You'll be good to go. And there's a few miscellaneous pieces that I wanted to cover before wrapping this one up, right? Things that might have slid through the cracks. Like if you're a hard gainer, what to do? What body fat percentages you want to aim for when you're trying to cut in bulk, and how to know when to switch? What supplements to take? Things like that. First, I think supplements, I don't have any groundbreaking news for you. The basics, like everything else that you would take when you're cutting, transfer just as well. A solid protein powder, like a whey protein powder, like the ones from Legion, can help a ton if you're having a hard time eating that much food in a day, especially if you're a hard gainer, because protein shakes will generally not fill you up as much as solid food. So it can be a really helpful tool to get them as much. Because we were talking about hitting the lower end of that window. That's still a lot of protein. Okay.
Yeah. Like
that's still a pretty good amount of protein. You're not going to accidentally eat that much protein. So a protein shake can help. Unless you're already hitting that protein goal, then cool, you don't need one. Creatine, which is the overwhelming amount of science behind how beneficial it can be during both cutting and bulking phases. And then maybe a pre-workout to help make sure that you're training hard enough to force your body to grow. I think that's important. And then HMB if you're training fast. The second that might slip through the cracks is if you're wondering what body fat percentages you should aim for. Now, everybody holds body fat differently, but for most people, these numbers work, where for women, if you're above 25% body fat, it's probably a good time to cut down and get a little bit leaner. And if you're lower than 20% or in that range, you're in a good place to start a lean bulk. Where for guys, it's a little bit different, a little bit lower. If you're over 15%, try and cut down to below that. And if you're lower or at 10%, you're safe to bulk or go into a lean bulking phase. And then finally is that conversation for hard gainers, which I don't know that maybe it just, I don't think it's ignorance. I haven't seen it as much. Are there a lot of women hard gainers, or just people who, this is people who have an insanely, what they say is fast metabolism. No matter how much they eat, they can't gain weight. Yeah. Is that common in females? I mean,
it's not as common, but as people who, like, it's not predominant, but there are a lot. I know a lot of people who really struggle to put on weight or have known and come across and just like have these insanely fast metabolisms and eat everything. Not just like the skinny person who are like, oh, like eats like shit, but doesn't eat a lot. They just kind of like eat like shit and are still skinny. That doesn't mean you have this super fast metabolism. You're probably just not eating enough, but like,
yeah,
literally eat so much. And it's like, where the hell does it go? For sure.
But, okay. Because I know I'm like, it's probably relatively about the same for the sexes, but I know it's a more common, at least talked about topic for guys, but this could be anybody. Like just people who supposedly they swear to God, no matter how much food they eat, they cannot gain weight to save their lives. You know, I don't live your life. I don't know your story. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, if you're not gaining weight, it's because you're not eating enough. Period. The end. Just like if you're not losing weight, it's because you're not in a deficit over time. Period. There's nothing that can go against that. This is not a theory. This is a physical law, right? The laws of thermodynamics. This is like trying to argue with gravity. You can't win that argument. Mm-hmm. Okay. You're not eating enough. So there's ways that you can do to focus on eating more. If you get to that point where you're like, I feel sick from eating so much. I can't possibly eat more. Is one, focus on calorie dense foods, foods like nuts, oils, fattier cuts of beef, things like that. Even drinking your calories can help. I told the story about Oscar that I was working with, and I had to do this too when I was a personal trainer in person on my feet. I had to be sipping on a Gatorade throughout the day just to drink my calories because I couldn't stomach more solid food. This is when I was trying to eat 4,000 calories a day. This is really common in like the bodybuilding space. You see dudes drinking Gatorade or just liquid calories. If I wasn't drinking that big drink, like it would have been impossible for me to hit my goal to get those extra calories.
Yeah. My brother's a hard gainer, like really, really, like he's got to eat so much. And like, it's hell when he's going and doing a bulking phase because he has to eat so much food. And I feel like people struggle to wrap their heads around it. And it's not like it's impossible for these people, just like it's not impossible for you to lose weight. It's just the amount of effort and thought and planning. It's just, you got to put so much more into it than the average person. That with some people who really do struggle to lose weight, who maybe have to have a higher deficit and are going to have to do a lot more things in their lifestyle and how they work out and make so many more changes to see the same weight loss as someone is just like, oh, like just slight calorie deficit. That's it. So easy. All done. You know what I mean? So it's just the amount of effort, the amount of time, and just the sheer like, the amount of food you really do got to put down.
Yeah.
It's hard for a lot of people to wrap their heads around, but that's just what it is.
And I know people who are dieting right now. One, congratulations for making it this far into a building or bulking episode if you're dieting right now. But you're like, shut the hell up. I wish I could eat more food. Like I know that's going through your head right now. But trust me, remember how even in any fat loss phase, a successful fat loss phase, you have to be consistent for a meaningful amount of time, not days to weeks. But months at a time, you have to be consistent. And that's hard because you're fighting hunger. You're fighting these emotions. You're fighting fatigue. You're fighting a lot of different things when you're losing fat. We just talked about how you have to be even more consistent and for a longer period of time to gain meaningful muscle, that you have to consistently put that much effort. If you're busy trying to force feed yourself that much food, I sometimes will work through and just forget to eat lunch because I'm not hungry, meetings back to back, whatever it is. It's a very challenging effort. So that's what I'm saying. Like drinking those Gatorades or body armors that I do through liquid calories, I would not have been able to gain muscle. And listen to this.
I literally hate that you just brought up Gatorade. I just tried to drink so much Gatorade these past four days. And I'm...
Trigger warning from Mariela.
It's literally triggering my gag reflex.
All right. Well, we won't say that. Drinking those calories though. I do want to get this out here because most of those calories come from sugar. And I just want to set this straight. I know that's a weird word for some people. Trust me, I'm a type 1 diabetic. I've spent a lot of my time researching and looking at this topic of carbohydrate intake, sugar intake for a good decade of my life. If you are active and you are not obese or overweight, drinking some of your calories each day that come from sugar has zero studied negative effects on your health. If you have a mostly good diet, whole foods, and you're adding a little bit of sugar through one of those sugary drinks, there are zero studied negative health impacts that will give you. Because I know a lot of people are like, oh, you just drink it. Dead serious. And ask any bodybuilder mm-hmm. who's done that. I promise you, through a certain period of their building phases, they've had to do the exact same thing. There's no negative outcome if those things are lined up. If you're moving, if you're not obese, that's how it works. So if you're a hard gainer, you got to figure out how to eat more food, calorie dense foods, drink your calories. Look at, I don't want to say hacking it, but almost look at trying to hack it. Like, you got to figure out a way to where you're not just feeling sick 24/7, even though that's a feeling that a lot of people who've gone through a successful muscle building phase can relate with. Is like, you're just going to have to go through that phase where you feel, ugh, because you're eating so much food. If that's you. But again, look at how much weight you're gaining. If you're gaining more than a half a pound or so a week, you don't have to be eating that much. Because mm-hmm. you can guarantee that extra is probably coming from body fat. I think that might be time to tie a bow on it. Is there anything else that we
Cody
might have stepped over?
Cody fucking carried that episode. I'm like, oh, I feel like I need a nap and I really didn't do much.
That was shockingly, if I was you the last time I was sick, I don't think I could have conjured a word longer than 3 or 4 letters together, let alone a whole sentence.
Honestly,
I'm going to give the
trophy. This is
going to
be, don't call me sexist. I strongly believe this, that women are so much better at fighting through being fucking ill than men. Like,
okay, I won't call you sexist because I 100% actually agree with you. In just looking at Karina and I, I'm a giant man baby when I get sick. And
so
she'll be like carrying something going through life. And I'm like, she's like, oh yeah, I've been vomiting for like 3 days. I'm like, what the? Mm-hmm. I would have been in my freaking bed with a blankie.
Yeah.
Watching Adventure Time making you wait on me.
Yeah.
And she just brought it up 3 days later.
I really think it's because, like, no, I know it can be attributed to our periods and just, like, we just have to go all of our lives. We just go, like, still have to function and pretend like everything's fine when we're, like, want to die for 7 days straight. Like,
no, y'all are good at hiding.
Yeah.
Almost
sure.
too good. Like, almost scarily good. Overall, great episode, I think. Now, we're going to put a Q&A down below this episode. So if you have questions that you need answered, you can put them in there. But as always, over on our premium is where we actually answer these Q&As every single Friday with brand new episodes. And again, if you're looking at if that was you, when we're talking about just exercising, just doing whatever you're kind of feeling that day, whatever exercises you're in the mood for, random sets, weights, and you need to get on some sort of a structured program, I think that's why our premium version has done so well, is because we're giving you guys these 12-week training programs mapped out to progressive overload, everything you need. It's $5 a month. These are training programs that I'm not going to lie, probably sell for like $90 to $100 a pop, and you get access to all of them. So if mm-hmm. you need that structure, you want to try it out, it's a very low cost opportunity to try. Jump on over there. But everyone in premium, we'll talk to y'all this Friday. Everybody else, we'll talk to you next Monday.